grease, steel, cracked iron, and bayou grass. Sun's heading creekside, days fading fast. Are you really digging for peace, or is that just a lie you tell to help you sleep? Sure that you really.
Welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire. Y'all are presumably still y'all. All are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. Let me start my good timer here so I know what's going on. Ooh, it's been a week. I'm tired. It's Sunday morning. It's actually about 11 o'clock on Sunday. I'm running real late recording this thing because I got home from Louisville yesterday on an airplane, and I was just wiped. I have a good time when I'm in Louisville. I didn't get too crazy, but I have a good time. And I was just wiped yesterday, and I didn't really accomplish a whole lot of nothing come Saturday. Actually, that's not even true. I worked on the book for like 2 hours with my editor, so, or maybe an hour. I may be exaggerating. And I did sit down and do some writing on this, and I did help take care of a little kitten since I've been back. So, some of y'all know that story and what's going on with little Miss Ophelia. And it's been a bit of a roller coaster. We're going to talk more about that at the end of the night. I'm really psyched. Tonight, unfortunately, I'm going to miss part of the live cast. Sadly, I'm not going to be around at the end. I'll be here at the beginning, but I'm not going to be in at the end. I got tickets. Just kind of fell through the ethos, and I got tickets for me and my lady to go see Paul Cawthon, and he's doing his acoustic set tonight at the Heights Theater in Houston, Texas. And I've been a fan of his for a while, but his most recent album, every once in a while I've had this happen throughout my life, that every once in a while you just get something that pops at right the right time for it to line up with things going on for you. And it's one of those, you know, it's one of those times where you just take a whole bunch of meaning from this one album. And that Black on Black album's just been hitting me just right. To whom I've talked to y'all about. To whom do you belong? You know, Black on Black, all that stuff. Lavender Jones. It's all fitting my vibe right now. And so I'm real excited to see that acoustic set. I also get a little night out on the town with my honey. And also, if you have been following the cat situation, you know it's been a kind of a stressful week. And it'd be nice to, you know, just be alone with Mama for a little bit. Just be alone with my Rachel for just a little bit. Just a minute for us to just vibe and connect. Some good music, maybe a few drinks. A little dancing. A little standing too close. That kind of good thing, you know. Need a little bit of that every now and then without them kids around, you know. Love them. Having that kitten at the house has been like having a newborn again, because we're just awake all the time, and you got to feed little booger's appetite strong though. But you hadn't feed her a lot, you know, and she got broken legs. So anyway, like I said, we'll talk about all that later. Louisville, everybody that come out and see me in Louisville, Gene Bond, day oneer, Gene Bond, Wrecking Yard day oneer, come out to see me in Louisville. Bought me a beautiful shot of Old Fort. First, let's just talk about Louisville. But I was so excited to meet Mr. Gene Bond and Mr. Cornbread Fred. I met the actual Cornbread Fred, and Cornbread Fred did not disappoint, brother. If somebody told me, it lined up a bunch of dudes with a bunch of different hats and belt buckles and such, and they said, one of these guys' name's Cornbread Fred. If he didn't look like Cornbread Fred, I would have been damn mad. That guy was, he just did not disappoint, man. Wonderful human being. I really enjoyed getting to meet him. Mr. Fleming come out. He's a Facebook fan. So many good Wrecking Yard people there. My old buddy Greg Roshan come out. Jim Lavender come out, man. Jim Lavender drove from Northwest Indiana with his son. His son gave me one of the best testimonials anybody's ever given me. Just about how much more him and his father are speaking and communicating as a result of his dad listening to some of the stuff I have to say. And that just made me just about as happy as anything ever could make me. So, but I flew out to Louisville Thursday. Horrible flight going in. Woo! I wanted off that airplane. That booger got to bouncing and shaking, and by God, I wasn't having it. I was, there's a bunch of stuff going on with the air traffic controllers, and it's, all that crap's scary, man. And you don't know who's telling the truth about nothing. None of us know the truth about nothing. All we know is the particular brand of bullshit we're being fed and whichever one tastes best to us, you know? But none of us know if anybody's telling the truth, you know? So I don't know who's if the air traffic controllers, yeah, I don't know what's going on with that shit. But it makes me nervous as an air traveler. It makes me nervous as an air traveler, I can tell you that. Whether that nervousness is warranted or not, you can make that decision for yourself. But it does make me nervous as an air traveler. All the personnel changes has not been good. It's not been good because the wrecks are up. And anyway, so they're warning about all kind of delays with TSA and all that kind of shit. I'll tell you, I went to the airport 2 hours early Thursday, and I was through TSA and Intercontinental in about 15 minutes. Of course, my groin sets off the alarm because my groin always sets off the alarm. I have Googled, searched, talked to doctors about this. I even asked my own doctor to give me some kind of scan so we just make sure I ain't accidentally got a piece of metal in Little Jerry. You know what I mean? Because I don't know what, every time I go through that damn TSA, you know, hands up, Macarena scanner, beep. We got something lit up around your groin there. And I read, oh, you got to pull your inseam up tight. Don't sag your pants. Don't. I've tried everything. Every time I set that alarm, I'm about to go get me one of those clear or whatever that bullshit is. Cause I'm just tired of getting my dick touched by strangers in front of other strangers in airports. And it just feels like that's become my occupation. It's like, are you going to do comedy? No. I'm driving over to Intercontinental, let a stranger touch my dick in front of a bunch of other strangers. And then I'm going to fly to Sacramento. And then when I get ready to leave Sacramento, I'm going to drive back to the airport and let another stranger touch my dick in front of a whole bunch of other strangers. And then I'm going to go home. That's my job now. I'm tired of it. I'm tired. I ain't bitching. I am bitching a little bit. But I got to that TSA 50 minutes. They wanted me up. This is the thing. And this is, I will tell you this. This pissed me off. This did piss me off. So every time they do that to you, they make you take your shoes off, and then you got to wait for your shoes to go through the machine, get scanner after all your shit's there. And you're just standing there in your socks, you know, thinking about your recent molestation and having to look at all the people in the eye that watched you get molested in front of everybody while you wait for your shoes to come. And so this time I was like, well, I'm just going to save myself trouble. I take my shoes off. I put them in the bin. Lay goes, you don't need to do that. Put your shoes back on. I said, I'm going to get hit by that thing. I get hit by it every time, and y'all going to make me take my shoes off, rescan it. She goes, you don't have to take your shoes off. Put your shoes back on. Put my shoes back on. What happens? Free! Hey, we got to rescan your shoes. Boy, I sure gave her a dirty look. But who knows what she was going through that day. Lady was just trying to do her job, so I don't wish her no ill will, but just a little bit. I was like, I hope, oh, just a little piece of me every once in a while. I talk all this shit about kindness, but I'm a human being too. I get frustrated with people too. And boy, I was just looking at her like, boy, I hope every time you go to shut a door for the rest of your life, the door just almost closes but doesn't close all the way. Like, I ain't wishing illness or nothing on her. Just a little frustration. Got in Louisville. Muhammad Ali is one of my favorite airports to fly in and out of. I love going to Louisville. I've told y'all that time and time again. Y'all know my fascination with Lee's Chicken, which did not get this time, which sucked. But I screwed around and forgot to eat Friday. Thursday night, I was a little shaken up. The flight was real turbulent. I was just kind of ragamuffin tired. And we had stayed up too late the night before dealing with this cat situation. And I was just a little run down after this week. I had driven up to Longview Tuesday to pick up my sister and bring her down here. Her truck's broke down, so my sister's visiting. I just, I was a little run down. And so I said, Thursday night, here's what I did. I Ubered me some Evan Williams and some Culver's. I like Culver's too, and there's not one anywhere near where I live now. So I got me a little Culver's burger, and I had me about 2 glasses of whiskey, and didn't have any of my other medicine. So I just laid in bed, talked to Rachel a little bit, and she was keeping me up to date on the cat situation. We were finding all kind of other stuff out, and went to bed, woke up about 6-7 morning, got up, got showered, went, took Uber downtown Louisville, and got me a cold brew coffee from Quill's Coffee, called Southern Gothic. Ain't that poet? I was like, boy, this is a town for a writer, man. At least for a writer with a stripe such as mine, you know? And I think that's what, Louisville's one of those few places in the world I go where the vibe fits me. Where I feel like I might have been a cool guy in that city, because it's my type of vibe. You know what I mean? It's just, I like that town. And it's a bourbon city. How could you not? So I went walking around telling people about the show. Our ticket sales weren't stellar. We had like 50 pre-sale at that point, and I had already put $200 in ads, and I was a little nervous we were going to lose money on the trip. And we didn't, thank goodness. We didn't lose money on the trip. We didn't make any, but we didn't lose none. And that's, sometimes that's good enough. Sometimes that's good enough. Can't be all the time, but every once in a while it can be good enough. And I took off through downtown Louisville. Just walking around. I like walking around that city. There's a lot of cool shit to see. A lot of old architecture. I love a copper top building. A lot of old buildings out there with them copper points and copper tops on them. And I like that look. I like that style of architecture. I don't know what it is, but I like it. So I strolled around, looked at, took some pictures from Mama. Met some people at the coffee shop, told them about the show. Ended up in my afternoon walkabout, as you will sometimes, at some kind of distillery. And I was on this street, and there was just this list of all these distilleries, and there's a lot of good ones, you know. And I seen the Old Forester distillery. And Old Forester makes me laugh because my Papa Clark liked Old Forester. Another old man I knew liked Old Forester. Me and Joey used to keep it at the house because it was, back in the day, it was cheap bourbon. You know, the way those trends and bourbons and stuff go and the market jumps up and down, you can never tell what's happening, but you never know who's going to be the big expensive one next. But sure enough, here come old Forester just a few years ago, start climbing in price. And I always kind of liked it. I always thought it was pretty good bourbon when it was cheap, but I wasn't going to pay no high dollar for it. I said, man, I got to go check out their distillery. And I walked in there, and like a lot of them, when you go in the bar, they have these little flights, and it's a little half ounce of whiskey, and there's different flights to choose from. And they had all kinds of stuff, but they had one that was, I feel like it was called Rich and Decadent, but it was the Prohibition flavor. So it was the 1900 recipe, the 1910 recipe, and the 1920 recipe. And I said, boy, that's the one I want right there. That's why I'm feeling adventurous. I'm feeling prohibited. Let me get that Prohibition selection, because I think I'd have probably been drinking it during the Prohibition. Boy, sure enough, they bring my little flight out, and I was by myself, and this couple sitting at another table over here, maybe a little older than me, not much. They said, hey, we noticed you're by yourself. You want to come sit with us? What? I mean, that's just the vibe of Louisville. That's the vibe of Louisville. These people are from out of town, but that's the vibe in that town. It's one of the few towns where you walk around downtown and talk to people, and they're from there. You walk around downtown Houston and talk to people. If you meet 5 people from Houston, boy, you can kiss my ass. Or I'll kiss yours. Like, I said that wrong. I don't reckon any of you won't kiss my ass. That's what I meant. I'll kiss your ass. You meet 5 people downtown Houston that are from freaking Houston. These people invited me to their table. I sat down. They're wonderful people from Butte, Montana. No, they're from somewhere else. Maybe Helen? No. Billings. They lived in Billings, Montana, but he was from Butte, Montana originally. So we had a lot. I had done some pipelines up there, and we had some fun conversation. We talked a little bourbon. Of course, conversation comes around what you do, and they were retired, and I told them I was in town to do stand-up comedy. And of course, we talked about that stuff a little bit. Then a lady from another table, she said, "Hey, I don't mean to eavesdrop." She goes, "But I was just listening and overhearing. Are you the Faulkner guy?" And I looked at her and grinned. I was like, you know, for years people have been calling me the truck guy. And I ain't gonna lie, I like the Faulkner guy better. If I'm gonna be some kind of guy, I'd rather be the Faulkner guy than the truck guy. I mean, I like doing trucks, but that ain't all I do. And she said, yeah, she goes, "I just love that video." And she said, "My husband is a huge fan of you. He's down at a different distillery, Angel's Wings Distillery, doing their tour. And he's coming over here to meet me." And so I gave them the link to the show, tickets, all that stuff. They wanted to get tickets to the show. They were all looking for something to do that night. And I went through my little flights. That 1900 was real good. The 1910, to me, had the best flavor. Best flavor, like going down, it went down real smooth. But Lord have mercy, that 1920, 115 proof. It bit you just a little bit right off the bat. Just a little, get you, you know. Boy, I walked out of that distillery with a little hitch in my giddy up. Let me tell you, son, boy, I was just as high stepping it down old Main Street there, you know. I was feeling pretty good. I walked around, met some more people, just walked around downtown Louisville, meeting people, talking to folks, telling them about the show. Enjoying the vibe. My good buddy up there, Skinny J, Jim Cole, he's the man that single-handedly saved LRS 102 radio. Basically just bought it and kept it going. And it was the premier rock station up there. And Louisville's known for the rock music. Louisville's known for a lot of art. A lot of art has come out. Hunter S. Thompson. And now I can't think of nobody. Slint. My Morning Jack. There's just been a ton of music and cool stuff coming. Louisville's got a pretty good burgeoning little comedy scene. I always meet some interesting young comics while I'm up there. Boy, by God, he said, "Man, I'm going to go live 2 to 5. You want to come be on the radio with me?" I said, "Hell yeah, man." So I caught me an Uber over to the radio station, meet up my old buddy Jim, you know, Skinny J, and we start chopping it up on air. And honestly, Friday was one of my favorite times I've had on radio in a long time. Me and Jim just having good, natural, organic flow. We're friends. We get along. We like each other. We like talking music. We like talking art. We like talking life. He's a little bit of an elder Gen X. He's a little older than me. He's like the age of all my friends' older brothers and stuff, you know, and Uncle Bobby, you know, he's that elder. He's on that upper end of the Gen X. And hell, there ain't many of them left. We got to preserve them. God bless. And he's one of the few that ain't turned into a boomer, because a lot of our elder Gen X decided they were boomers at some point, started behaving like boomers. And I don't know what that's about, but it's what they done. So we had a good time. We chopped up. Big Joe Murphy, another local comic. Well, also, he worked radio with Skinny J for years. He shows up to the studio, jumps on air with us. We chop it up. We had some time. We laugh. We cut up and laughed in that studio like old friends ain't seen each other in 20 years. We had a good time. I can't wait to get a recording of that because it's going to be really good. Got to talk about the book a lot. Talk about the shows. Talk about Mr. G's, where he's doing the shows. Big Joe Murphy gives me a ride back to my hotel. He said, "Man, you want me to run you to? I know you want your Lee's chicken. You want me to run you by Lee's chicken?" I said, "No, I'll Uber it over to the hotel while I'm getting ready for the show." Well, hey, I get to the hotel. Rachel's meeting the cat surgeon, and that's a thing. And turns out he's a friend. It's kind of wild how I know this guy. And she puts me on speaker so I can hear everything he can say about what's going on with this little ragamuffin cat that we have brought into our lives, or the Lord, somebody has brought into our lives. Geraldi Amador brought this into our lives. But he, it was good. I got to hear everything he had to say. But the problem is, we didn't get done. It was like right before showtime. I had to get dressed, run over to the venue to do the show. So I never got my Lee's chicken, but I did eat some chicken wings at Mr. G's, and those all right. But I forgot to eat all day, so I had to snarf me down about 5 chicken wings before show started, so that I wasn't all shaky and kind of weird. I was feeling a little rough. I'm getting bad about that when I travel, about forgetting to eat at normal times, because I just get in the vibe of things. And when I'm promoting and marketing and working, I like that when I'm on the road, because it makes the day go by quicker. I get to meet interesting people. I'm not alone. And it feels like it's quicker that I get to go home and see my babies. But sometimes I lose track of shit when I'm doing that kind of stuff. Get caught up in the moment. And I don't like to eat with other people. I like to eat alone. I like eating with Rachel, but most time I prefer to eat alone. I don't know. I'm just weird about that. I think it's like some fat kid stuff, some insecurity. I feel nervous eating around other people because I don't want them to look at what I'm eating or have something to say about it or be thinking something about, well, that's why he's fat. He ate that piece of chicken. You know, that it's fat kid insecurity, and I need to get past it, but it's something I kind of struggle with. The show just went just about as good as you could have ever hoped for. I think we ended up with about 80, 85 people. We had a full room. So many people bought stickers, come up and took pictures with me after the show. And I love the meet and greet after the show, because I've still got all that energy from the stage. And now I get to just hang out with all these people. I always assure people, you come to my show, you're going to leave feeling better than when you got there. And I hope that's true, and it seems like it's true from the way people talk to me after the show. I'm not just here to make folks laugh. I'm trying to make people feel better, and I'm trying to make people feel better the best way I know how, and that's by laughing at me and my silly shit. And I told the Colorado Rams story again, and it worked so good. Wrote a new version of the Wrecking Yard joke that I'm really happy with, that I'm actually doing on stage. It was just a good show. It was a good show. I did 52 minutes, and everything them people saw, most of it was new, because it's it's all the other parts of the tipping point I'm working on right now to wrap up my special. And I really think that Colorado Rams story is going in there. I also told some stories about my old neighbor, Daniel Butler. I told the Huckleberry story and the making him mow his yard too much story. Like, we had a good time. Couldn't have been happier with how that show went. Afterwards, had some real good fellowship. My boy, I've talked about him. He's a young automotive builder named Mikey Brown. Mikey Brown came out to see the show with his wife, Ruth, and I got to hang out with him. Mikey has been building Hot Wheels cars for a little bit, and now he's off to new adventures, do some new stuff. And Mikey and me, we brainstormed a little bit about the Volkswagen. We talked a little. He's got a documentary he's making, and he wants me to narrate it, and I couldn't be more excited to be part of a project. We're going to try to take it to Sundance, and I'm going to try to help him get it there. And Mike, boy, I had a good time having fellowship with Mikey Brown, man. I was glad to see him. I think he's one of the most interesting builders out there. I think he's one of the most creative people out there, and his builds are the first vehicles in a decade that have tickled that little part of my brain that loves cars. They really are. So I had good fellowship with him, Jim Lavender, Gene Bond, Cornbread Fred. My old buddy Jeremiah Martin was on the show. I love Jeremiah Martin. He's one of my favorite comedians to work with. We just have a real good vibe together. He's from Western Kentucky. He drove out to do the show with me. And Jeremiah just beat him up, did a hell of a job, got me on stage. We had a great, after that show, went outside, some core Wrecking Yard people, old school fans, Greg Rochon, Jim Lavner, Skinny J, Big Joe Murphy. We find us a little table out there, and boy, the joints start going around the group. Ding, 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 ding. Fast forward 2 hours, 3 hours, great conversation, great fellowship. Jeremiah gives me a ride back to the hotel. Crash out, get up early, catch a plane back to Houston, Texas. Successful trip, good weekend. Little run down, but I'm excited about this concert. Now I'm trying to catch me a little nap while this is uploading. What a weekend. Special shout out. I don't have a sponsor still, but I'm going to tell y'all about a band. There's a man named Dave Mays. Dave Mays owns a business out in California called Hot Rod Innovations. They build parts for C10s, all kind of stuff, like front end parts, all kind of actuators for like hideaway headlights. They build some really cool stuff. Go look up hotrodinnovations.com. Look at what Dave Mays has to offer. Dave Mays is a good man for a lot of reasons. Dave Mays is an old sprint car racer. Grew up racing dwarf cars. Now him and his son, him and his father were a racing team. Now him and his son race dwarf cars. His son races dwarf cars, and the kid's fast. He's good. And all that stuff was happening. That cat, the first initial offer they gave us was $800 just to start working on that cat. I ain't have that kind of money. I don't have it. And I shared the story, and Dave Mays reached out to me and said, "Hey, man, there's something inside me telling me I want to do this. Can I pay the vet bill?" And just without hesitation, he paid that vet bill, $800, get them to start working on that baby cat. Just out of the goodness of heart, told me he enjoyed my art, that I had helped him laugh on some dark days, and he just wanted to do that. And just check out hotrodinnovations.com. Just check them out. Give them a website click, even if you ain't going to buy nothing. Their stuff's in some magazine. If you happen to be somewhere in the kind of Northern California area and you know a fella named Dave Mays that owns a business that makes parts for C10s and likes to race dwarf cars with his son and build dwarf cars for people, you know a real one. That's Dave Mays, hotrodinnovations.com. Whew. I want to talk to you. I realized something. We're working on the book right now. And I realized one of the things that happens sometimes in the podcast is, I work with notes here. And if I miss a note or I forget something, sometimes I forget to tell y'all an important part of the story. Or what I think is a vital part of the story. And I realized that I never really discussed when Papa Clark died. I kind of skipped over that in the El Camino chapter. And I mentioned it later on when I was talking about my Papa Longmire, about how they both died on the same day, a couple years apart. But I got to the end of the El Camino thing. I was telling y'all other stuff. I didn't get in there. And he's such an epic character in the Wrecking Yard that it deserves mention. I can tell you, I was a senior in high school when it happened. I can't remember if he died. I have a lot of people that died at the beginning of February and the end of January, but he's one of them. Him and my Papa Longmire died on the exact same day. I think he died January 31st, 1996. Now, before all that, in the time I stopped going up there from the time I was about 14 until I was about 18, and I started going up there on my own. Y'all know the stuff. My mom found out he wasn't her real father. Her and Granny had this big blow up. Took them years to get past any sort of way. And it took her and her daddy a long time to get right with one another. In fact, in that time period is when me and my mama went and met her daddy and her biological father, Raymond Harris. He was in a sanitarium maybe, or he had dementia real bad. He was beyond, he didn't have any muscle control, any of that stuff. He couldn't talk. He was just an old man dying in a bed, all twisted up from his disease. But I realized in the course of working on this part of the book that I had never done the math. Granny got knocked up by this dude when she was 16 years old. 16 years old. He was 26 years old and married. I don't care. Look, I know it takes two to tango. I know it takes two to tango, but there ain't no other way to paint that fella other than as a piece of shit. You know, some people just ain't worth a damn. And fortunately, some of my DNA and genetic lineage comes from a fella that wasn't worth a damn. Fella thought it was a good idea to knock up a 16-year-old girl and then abandon her so that he didn't lose his wife. Grown-ass man. Papaw married Granny. Knew she was pregnant with another man's baby. Married her anyways. That's what sowed all the seeds of discontent between him and his own father and his mother and them and Granny. And that's what led to his mother utilizing that moment to humiliate my mother and tell everybody at her birthday party he wasn't her daddy. I'm like seeing all the pieces of the puzzle. I'm putting all this together. I'm writing it and I'm having to research and find all the pieces of the puzzle. Stuff I didn't know. My Papaw Clark may have failed the world and some of his people a lot of different ways, but he was the glue that kept our family together. He was the glue. He was the glue that kept fighting to keep our family together. A lot of failures, you know, there's a lot of stuff, but he was the wrecking yard. He's where the wrecking yard started. He gave it to me. He passed it on to me. Not the land, but the place in my head is because of him. Y'all know the story about that, about the time him and Granny, they separated. They got mad at each other. They was fussing a bunch of shit. And Papaw went and got him an RV. It wasn't even an RV. It was an old fifth wheel camper they used to keep out at the lake. It was run down and ragged. They gave up their lake lot and they moved that camper out to Maurice. Maurice had him a little junkyard, always had him a piece of land. Maurice, my papaw's best friend. And he was living out there in a camper on Maurice's land. Which a couple episodes ago, I talked about Papaw Wiley, Papaw's dad, and how he ended up in that same boat at the end of his life. And Papaw brung him to the wrecking yard and built him and my daddy and Aunt Janet and Aunt Barbara. My daddy and Aunt Barbara and Aunt Janet, Mom, they all worked on that little house and helped build that house, Papaw Wiley. They all built that shop. They were a family that did stuff. I thought it was interesting, the parallel that it happened in Papaw towards the end of his life. Of course, his heart starts failing him. And I know my Aunt Janet made me laugh. We was on the phone. She goes, well, you said there ain't no heart problems in the family, but you know, Daddy died of heart failure. And I was like, well, yeah, but I don't share no genetic material with Daddy. I don't share. Me and Papaw ain't blood, you know, turns out. He passed some kind of genetics on to me, whatever the junker marker is. He put that in me. But I suspect that was learned behavior as opposed to behavior built in by DNA coding and such. When his heart started failing, that's when him and Mom made amends. That's when he come down to Houston, have heart surgery. And they replaced one of the valves in his heart with a valve out of a pig's heart, I think, make it work. Papa was overweight, you know, he big old belly. And the men ate hot sauce and drank Greek Polly Pop loaded down with sugar with every meal. You just only do so much of that. And he smoked Camel cigarettes like they was going to run out. They said, you got to quit smoking. You got to quit all this stuff. We're going to fix your heart. You're going to have to eat better. You're going to have to do some things. Well, Papa has that surgery. Y'all know the story of the El Camino. That's when he finds out Granny's trying to sell me the El Camino behind his back. He gives me that old black El Camino. We wasn't able to go up there and fix it up just yet. We was, you know, that was the, ow. I think he only got to see it running one time because we went up there, that Thanksgiving break and, tore the engine down. It had a bad piston in it. We put new pistons in that old 305 it had and got it running. Other than that, the car was in pretty good shape. Got it running good. And I drove it over. Papa, when he went back home after his heart surgery, him and Granny let him move back in the house. She was going to look after him. We all should have known that was a bad idea. Papa stayed with Granny. I went over and saw him with my dad. We went over and visited him, showed him the El Camino, got the El Camino title squared away, and he was happy to hear it run. He was happy I had it. He also told me on that visit he was going to give me his .38 police special revolver. I think it's a Smith & Wesson .38 revolver. I don't know what happened to that gun. I never got it. Sure would have liked to have had it, but I don't know what happened to it. Somebody got it. Wasn't me. I don't know who ended up with that .38 Papaw's that I was promised, but ain't a big deal. I got his El Camino. I was already making plans. I was going to go back to Kilgore as soon as high school was over. I was headed up to Kilgore. I was going to move back up to Kilgore. I was glad to spend time with Papaw. I was glad things were kind of trying to come back together in the family, you know. Papaw and my dad, my mom, they were trying. They were trying. Meanwhile, it snows that year, and Granny decides she needs a carport for her car. My parents had given her some nicer, I forgot what kind of car it was. They'd bought her a car or given her one of their cars. I can't remember which one it was, but she had so many of our cars, I can't remember which one it was at the time. But my parents had put her in a nicer car. Well, by God, she thought she needed to have a carport for that car. So she harangues Papa. While he's recovering from all his heart surgery, he's supposed to be on light duty. He's supposed to be taking it easy and fixing his diet. And I'm sure she was still feeding him all the same shit. And she harangues Papa till he decides he's going to go out there and build her that damn carport. And he just wasn't strong enough running a post hole digger no more, you know. Just a pair of slap diggers. He didn't have nobody up there to help him. I don't know where Bobby Jr. was, but he was not in the mode to be helping out his parents at that time. Now, I love Bobby Jr. I talk about my Uncle Bobby all the time, but y'all got to remember, he didn't show up for a lot of people. He didn't show up for his daughter as much as he should have, by any stretch. And he had a bad habit of running out on people when they needed him. That's the thing I've tried my best not to take away from him. Pebble Clark went out there and started building this damn carport for this woman. And he poured concrete in 5-gallon buckets to set the post in for the carport. And you can tell he just worked his ass off on it. And clearly he worked himself to death on it because he got out there and building that stinking carport for her and overworked himself. He came back in the house that night, was laying on the couch watching TV. And Granny said he sat up on the couch. He said, something just popped in my chest. And she immediately called the paramedics and he started having a heart attack. Well, they live out there in the sticks. By the time paramedics got out there, he was already in bad shape. They did CPR. They tried to save him. Broke all his ribs. All that stuff that they do when they're really just trying to keep somebody alive. And it just wasn't enough. He was dead before they even got to the hospital. I come home from school. And my mama met me at the door. She said, I got to tell you something. And I don't know how, but I already knew. I said, Papa? She said, yeah. You're Papa Clark. It was the same year my Meemaw died. It was my first big death to go through. And then Papa Clark right there at the end of the school year. I was fighting like hell to graduate because I'd screwed my school career up so heavily. And I was driving his car. And we loaded up our family and we went, and they ended up cremating him. They didn't have no money to bury him. He didn't have no funeral insurance, nothing like that. Him and Granny didn't have a pot to piss in, a window to throw it out of at that point. I remember it was so different because my Meemaw's funeral used a nice casket, nice headstone, all that good stuff. Papa Clark's funeral at the Raider Funeral Home was just him laying on a gurney with a blue sheet over him. It wasn't quite as dignified. I didn't like looking at him like that. It's probably part of what drove me to go back up there afterwards and go live in the wrecking yard and go. I wanted that's what I thought my plan was. I liked what he had. I wanted something like that. I wanted a wrecking yard. Man left a mark on me. I was his oldest grandson. And whether he's biological related to me or not, none of that really matters these days. All that matters is that he took the time and opportunity to be a grandfather to me. And he took that opportunity every chance he got. And he gave me whatever he could give me. And that includes love. And as far as that aspect of his character, it's unmatchable. It's unmatchable in my mind. My other grandfather did not take that kind of interest in me. My own dad has not had that kind of relationship with my children. And some of that's probably my fault. I'm not probably. Some of it's definitely my fault. Can't rewrite history, though. Old man worked himself to death trying to make that woman happy. Worked himself right to death trying to make her happy. I hope he hollered out one more, damn it, Reba June, right before he kicked the bucket. Just one more. I hope he kicked out one more. Damn it, Reba June. I hope he kicked one more out before he passed on to the next ram. That's what I hope. You know, it's funny, I had that joke for years about how I called it the wrecking yard because I thought that's where Papa did all his reckoning. And now the wrecking yard is me, and it's where I do all my reckoning.
It's me. The wrecking yard's mine now. I do the reckoning. It's the place where I do all my reckoning. That makes me laugh. Let's wrap that story up there. We got more to talk about here in a little bit, but we do got a bunch more Hot Wheels. We got some packages to open, and we got some good testimonials to go through. Stick around, and we'll wrap this whole thing up. Let's do some. Should we open first or do some? Let's open first. Let's open some Hot Wheels first. Boom, boom, boom. Let's do that. Here we go. Here we go. What's our count at? 1,277 Hot Wheels is where we stand for our day of giving. Now, I'm going to make a quick little note. The day of giving was yesterday, but I was flying, and I just couldn't do it on the day that they had planned to do it. So what I've decided to do is I'm going to do it, I think we're going to do it November 11th. We're going to give it another month because the post office is still showing me I got boxes and boxes of Hot Wheels coming. And so I want to make sure I can take them all and divvy them up. So we've decided to divvy them up between about four organizations or five organizations here in Houston, Texas, to make sure it gets spread around. And so we're going to do it on November 11th. So it's about a month late of what we're supposed to be doing it. But we got more packages coming. So I just want to make sure, you know, we get some stuff. I want to get some stuff out to Toys for Tots, and I want to spread it out. And I don't want anybody to miss out on any kindness, goodness headed their way because of a date. So that's why I'm doing that. Let's get into this. Boom, boom, diggity, boom. Please, if you are going to send any, please send them. Make sure they're going to be here by November 11th. Because after that, then I'm just going to have to go take them somewhere else. What? Look at this, man. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Formula One. These are cool. Formula One Indy cars. And got a little note here. Jerry Wayne and Rachel, I kept meaning to pitch in and send a couple Hot Wheels for the Driven Dreams Day of Giving. Something special real about y'all making that happen for those kids. From Adam Al Sergenay, that's my good friend and editor of the Wrecking Yard book. That's the guy that discovered that found the podcast, got me my book. That's my guy, Adam Al Sergenay. Y'all going to see his name a lot because me and that dude, we're about to start writing screenplays. Well, you're going to see all kinds of stuff with our name on it. I love writing with this guy, and I don't ever like writing with anybody. I am a little concerned about my book because he wrote the sentence, something special real about you all making that happen for those kids, and I had to give him some grief about it. Something special real. Something special real. Might be time to call in the copy editor. We got problems, Houston. All right, so that's five. We'll add five to 1,277. I ain't good at math. Let's see. That's a 1,282. All right, 1,282. I told you I ain't worked a flip at math. Let's look here, see what we got here. Man, have y'all seen those little rolling sharpeners that some of you probably don't do TikTok, but somebody come up with this little rolling sharpener and it's like just a little magnet block and it holds your kitchen knife at an angle like that. And then you roll this little thingy up and down it and it's got like a 1,000 grit side and maybe a 700 grit side or something like that. And it does it just right. I told y'all, I can't sharpen knives to save my life. I bought one of these for like $5 off TikTok shop. And next time I'll bring it out here and show it to you. I've been sharpening all our old Faberware and kitchen knives. Boy, I got kitchen knives that can slice through anything right now. They are just fantastic. Man, I'll have to show y'all at sharpening because I'm somebody who can't sharpen a knife, and that 750 works for me. I just think about it, Mo. The Freedom knife get a little dull. I think I'm going to see if I can figure out how to use that little rolling sharpener on it, pretty it up. Hot Wheels cars, 72 pieces. I don't know who it come from. It comes from... The customer says Toy World LLC. So these are from Toy World LLC, I guess. There's no note. See if there's a name here. Carrier unknown. Diamond Comic Distributors, Polk Lane, Olive Branch, Mississippi. Yeah, I don't know who sent these. If you sent these, please reach out and let me know. I would love to know who our benefactors are. 72 Hot Wheels, baby. 72. And I'm going to tell y'all, I'm about to cheat and get the calculator out for that one. I ain't going to try to count that in front of y'all and feel stupid. Whoa, what is leaking? Why is there water everywhere? All right. There goes my air conditioner leaking. We're going to do something about that. All right, 72 pieces. 72 pieces. I'm going to wait and do the add up at the end. And it'll seem like such a big number, and it'll be more exciting. Hi-O LLC Warehouse, Los Angeles, California, to J.W. Longmire. Let's see. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Wait, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 4 times 6. What is that? That's 24 Hot Wheels. Ooh, these are cool. Rod Squads. Ooh, there's even an art car. Hell yeah, there's even art cars in there. That's interesting. So that is another 24 Hot Wheels. And unfortunately, no note. We don't know who these come from. If you sent me some Hot Wheels from Los Angeles, just holler at your boy and let me know it was you. I like to give credit where credit is due. So that's another 24 Hot Wheels, another 24 smiles for babies ain't got a lot to smile about. And boy, that just tickles me to death. Y'all are some good-hearted folks, but I have seen it this week in spades. I'm about to talk to y'all about some stuff. Y'all don't even know that y'all saved me this week. Y'all saved me. And y'all don't even know. Y'all saved me. And made me realize the message we're pushing here is important. God bless you, Jerry Wayne, from Nathan Huey. There's more. Nathan Huey's guy sent us all the tracks. What is this? What is that? We'll throw that over there so I can ignore it later when I should be cleaning up the garage. How about that? This is a set. Do not separate. God bless you, Nathan Huey. He is... Some people have a lot to give, and by God, when they take the opportunity to do it, it just makes me smile. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That's another 24 pack. Am I doing that right? 4 down 6? Yeah, yeah. Another 24 pack. Right there, buddy. Dadgummit. That's another 24 pack of Hot Wheels. My good buddy, Nathan Huey. What am I getting caught up on here? It's about to irritate the piss out of me. God dang. That this box is huge. What do we got here? More. Oh my goodness. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10 packs of 15 cars. 150 cars right here in this box. 10 packs of 100 and 10 packs 15. That's 150 cars off of that box right there. 150 smiles for babies. We got a note. Amazon fulfillment. John Euler. Maybe John Euler. I hope that's who sent them. There is no note in the box. All right. 150 cars. 150, by God. 150 cars. Let's, I'm trying to go through these quick. Well, you know, it'd be smart if I just opened all these boxes. Holy shit. Holy shit. Look at that. Boom. 50 pack right there. 250 packs. Oh, there's no freaking note. Amazon Fulfillment Services in Houston, Texas. So that might have come from right here, hometown. Oh, I wish there was a note. Another 100 smiles for babies. Another 100 smiles for babies right there. I might put these over here. Oh, wait a minute. Nope, that was the old note from Nathan Huey. There's still more. There's the last two boxes. Last two. Ozone Toys. Oh, there's a note. See, that other ones came. God, but this is more from Nathan Huey. I think Nathan Huey might have sent a bunch of that. I can't even tell what's in here. Nathan Huey. Our good buddy Nathan Huey. Let's see what we got here. There's all them other ones come from Ozone Toys. Makes me think maybe all this come from, a bunch of this come from Nathan Huey. He has been a big donator to the cause. And sure enough, what do we got here? Another 24 pack of Hot Wheels. Another 24 pack of smiles, baby. That's what's up. Good old Nathan Huey. Let me write those down so I don't forget. 24. What we got here? Another pack. It's another 24 pack from our good buddy. Oh, there he is. Nathan Huey. My goodness, sir. You are sure doling out a lot of kindness for babies, buddy. Another 24 pack right there from Ozone Toys of Hot Wheels cars and smiles for kids. Let's do some math. All right. Oh, I would not just be a nuffin', my head all full of stuffin', my heart all full of pain. Life would be so merry, things would be a ding-a-dairy, if I only had a brain. I would while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. All right, I have added these all up. We are now up to 1,602 smiles for babies, 1,602 smiles for kids that maybe ain't got a lot to smile about. That's what y'all's goodness. That's what we've cultivated here. That's the kind of energy and goodness we're going to bring to the Christmas season for some kids that you ain't got. I love y'all. That's beautiful. 60. We're marching. We get resting, but we might screw around, hit 2,000 smiles this year. God almighty. If whatever I'm doing in the world encourages this, then I feel like I'm on the right track. Ain't nothing else I ever done in my life encourage behavior like this. I think maybe the older I get, I'm starting to figure out how to find the best in people. And I've had that tested lately. Let's see. Let's do some testimonials, if you will. This is from last week's episode. That was one about, like, that was a lot about Pawpaw, too. There's some stuff going on, and I've been thinking about the old man a lot. At our buddy at O2... Wow. Life includes death. Hang in there. Yes, it does. It's been very prevalent in my life this past week. It is a necessary part. I often joke that I think it's the silliest thing we do is die, but it is a necessary part. We work ourselves to the bone trying to get some golden ring. And then one day it's just over and all this bullshit you collected and all these things you said, that they better be good enough to represent you. I'm trying to make all the things I say represent me so that when my time is gone, maybe my words can still help people. But you're right. You're 100% right. At Texasippi, and while you are pickup truck shopping, you may want to add a long bed to your checklist. Going to need it to haul all the Hot Wheels. Brother, you ain't kidding. I am looking for a long bed. I thought I found the perfect deal to do a little swap, but he was looking for a car for his kid, but the kid can't drive a standard transmission, so it's not going to work out. So, but I do, I got a couple leads, people coming looking at Mazda, and I've been following a couple long bed Z71s that I'm real interested in, and I can just about assure y'all within the next week or two, I'm going to be telling y'all about my new ragamuffin truck I bought. I'm ready to go back to a pickup truck. I've done this little short drapey car about as long as my hip can handle it. Well, shout out to Dr. Hill at the Joint Clinic on Little York here in Houston. Dr. Hill is fixing my hip. My God, I'm ready to get back in the gym. She's making me feel better. At C. Jansen, I believe you're confusing the GMT half-tons transmission. They are standard equipped with 4L60E. I think you know this because all of your reasons perfectly fit the 4L60 as the 6L80 came out in the 2009 GMT 900 platform. 4L65E did come in the 6-liter GMT 800 half-tons, and the 4L80E came in the gas 3/4 and 1-ton trucks. You are 100% right. I did screw that up. I just mixed it up. It's all these daggum acronyms. It's all these daggum acronyms. I get them mixed up and start rattling off at the mouth. You're 100% right. That is exactly, I meant the 4L60. The 4L60 is about the cheapest automatic you can get rebuilt. There's parts for them everywhere. I don't know much about a 6L80 at all because I've never owned one. But you're right. That 4L60E is the transmission I was thinking of. And it's a pretty good unit. People complain about them, but they forget how many of them were built and used and how many applications. And when you have that many of them out there, you're going to have a high failure rate. That's just how manufacturing works. You're going to have a high failure rate. You also have a high success rate. Nobody talks about that. I've had a high success rate with 4L60s. You know, the ones that have taken a crap on me, by God, they served their time. They served their time. They did everything I needed them to do. That's why I want another one of them pickups. 1,602 smiles for babies. God bless every daggum one of you. God bless every daggum one of you. When we wrap this thing up, we'll get out of here for today. So Mikey Brown comes down to Houston a lot and he really wants to come sit in on the Wrecking Yard podcast with me. I said, brother, we got to do it. I got to have Mikey Brown here for y'all to meet Mikey Brown. We'll talk Volkswagen the whole time. We'll have a good time, man. So I'm trying, next time Mikey Brown's close to where I'm at, we're going to get him over here. We're going to bring him out to the Wrecking Yard. He should be a fixture here anyways. The boy's got everything about the Wrecking Yard, ought to be about a person. That kid's as Wrecking Yard as they come. So I got an episode coming up. Whenever we can make it happen, we're going to have Mikey Brown here out here at the Wrecking Yard. Let's go wrap up for the afternoon here so I can get this edited and uploaded in time for y'all to watch it this evening. Did I lose that? I begin this week in a dark place. I preach a message of kindness. I know, I hear myself. And I do my damnedest to practice it. That don't mean I don't use the phrase, you know, driving piece of shit half a dozen times every time I drive somewhere. I ain't just talking to y'all. I'm talking to me too. I can't tell folks every week to look for kindness and goodness in the world and how that's real strength if I don't believe that shit and let my actions reflect it. But damn if it ain't hard some days. Some days it's just hard to do. I'm still trying to learn this stuff myself. It can wear thin when you're going through it, though. Sunday got dark for me. I recorded last Sunday one of my favorite episodes of this podcast I'd ever done. Y'all heard me how hopeful I was going to get to go up and see Rashonda before she passed on. Y'all knew that was my plan. It was Tuesday when I went to go get my sister. That was the quickest I could get up there. I was going to go see that baby and tell her goodbye. And about 10 minutes after wrapping up the filming, Aunt Janet texted me, I learned I'd lost the chance to say goodbye to someone I love. My sweet younger cousin, Shawnee, Uncle Bobby's daughter, had passed. I held that baby on my knee, towed her around, babysat her. It hurts when it's the younger ones in your family. Started drinking after her daddy died, and she didn't stop until she hurt herself. I feel like a great many people failed to make her realize how special she was, including myself. I feel like we failed her. It seems like just yesterday she was this grinning, exuberant 13-year-old in a volleyball uniform, jazzed about a game that went well. We lost our other cousin, Brittany, about the same age the year before. My Aunt Lori's oldest. I kept thinking about the lyrics from that song, The Kids Aren't All Right by Offspring. How can one little street swallow so many lives? That's my Sexton Road song. It's on Wrecking Yard Grady. Really, how in the fuck is it even possible? They were babies I held. I was feeling dark. I wasn't feeling kind. I wasn't feeling like picking myself up. I was feeling like wallowing in self-pity and being sad. I went to Longview to pick up my sister to come visit us. I drove nearly 4 hours in silence. Just mulling shit over in my head. Trying to wrap my head around what the hell just happened. Right outside of Longview, Texas, on the way in Longview, get my sister Rachel text me. Our friend Uraldi, she's married to my, I married them. I was their officiant at their wedding. She's married to my good friend Nathaniel Amador, a fellow stand-up comedian that I have a great deal of respect and admiration and I think friendship with. Our friend Uraldi had a kitten wander up to her job site. She works in a business park off 290 Mangum. She says, this cat's just muddy. She's clearly homeless. She's caked in mud. She's mewing. She's looking for, she needs something, but me and my husband are terribly allergic to cats. Otherwise, I would take her home with me. But she's a kind soul. And she knew about our kittens that were killed by that dog a while back and how bad it had been. And Rachel texted me and she said, should I go get her? And I'm just going to tell y'all, I needed to win. I needed to do right by someone, something. And I said, yes. Go get that baby. On the way home from Longview, Rachel calls me. It's been few hours, she's gotten the kitten home. She started trying to clean her up. She says, baby, I don't know what that... Rachel's real good with animals. She knows a lot about animals. She grew up taking care of animals. Her dad bred dogs. She knows animals. She knows cats. She said, babe, her injuries are terrible. They're beyond my ability to fix them. She's all cut up. She's got maggots on her. She's weak, floppy. But just a mewing. I didn't have any ideas. I haven't had a lot of pets. I've never done a lot. I've never had to deal with a lot of hurt animal. That's not something that's in my wheelhouse. I don't know about stuff like that. I said, I don't know what to do, baby. I think we need to call around some vets. She goes, yeah, that's what I'm gonna do. She got off the phone with me. She started calling vets on Tuesday afternoon, almost 5 o'clock. She talks to Aldine Animal Hospital. They said, bring her over here, $40. We'll get her checked out and find out what's going on with her. So we decided that we're going to go check, get her checked out the next morning, see if they can help. But it's grim. That baby's hurt bad. She's real bad hurt. And I'm just like, man, I needed to win. I needed to win. I did not need something else to be sad about. And we took turns holding her in a blanket till 3 a.m., 3 in the morning. She'd settle in that blanket. I'd sing her low baritone country songs, old Keith Whitley and stuff like that, and Paul Carlson. My voice, I got a big old rumbly voice, and it rumbles in my chest when I speak low. And at low registers, it was just rumbling through my chest. Rachel suspected. It felt like I was purring to the kitten. And I sang to that baby and I cried for Shawnee and her. I did. I shed tears for them babies that night. Rachel takes her to the vet next day. She had a degloved right front leg and huge laceration on her throat that's just open. You can see her muscles working in there. The skin on her arms pulled away. There's maggots in there. There's maggots in her throat. Both front legs were broken. She's anemic as hell. She's having lost all her blood and iron from injury, plus the maggots are stealing it from her. She's missing teeth. She's got teeth knocked out in the right side of her mouth. The vet suspected she'd been hit by a car. He said the injuries were at least a week old. I suspect she crawled up in the engine compartment of a car and got whopped up by a fan or something, is what it looks like to me. And it's a real common thing to happen to cats and kittens anyways. They quoted us $800, and it's $800 I ain't got. Comedy's like contracting and a lot of other things. I've told y'all, it's feast or famine, and summer's always famine. I make my money in the fall and in the winter and the spring, but summer is always tough for entertainment. And I didn't know what to do, because we could surrender her to Bark, but we have to surrender her. We can't get her back. And they might fix her, but if her injuries are too grievous, they don't have the resources to do that. They'd probably put her down. I didn't know what to do. I decided to share her story on my Facebook page. And folks just showed up for that baby. Dave Mays offered to pay her vet bill right there on the... Strangers started sending... We put a GoFundMe together. Strangers started sending money to her GoFundMe. The minute he offered to pay the vet bill, Rachel rushed her back to the animal hospital. They did what they were capable of, but they're also a poor animal hospital in that they don't have a lot of resources either. And they did what they were capable of, but she ain't out of the woods yet. We know the prognosis got better. It went from 30% to 60%. But she also needs thousands and thousands of dollars worth of surgery. But her little spirit is plucking back up. We keep holding her, feeding her, singing to her. This little animal that grabbed our hearts. And I get a call Thursday morning from my buddy Barry Laminack. And Barry goes, hey man, Todd Hayden, fellow that owns Hop Scholar Ale House, which is a bar I've done shows at before. And I like the dude. Unbeknownst to me, he's the top pet surgeon in Texas or the world. Hell, I don't know. But he's one of the best. He travels all around the country fixing cats. He specializes in cats and kittens. This is what this man does. This is what he has devoted his ten thousands and thousands of hours to. And Todd Hayden, Barry puts us in touch because Todd Hayden wants to offer his services. He wants to try to fix his baby's legs. I had to fly out to Louisville. Rachel takes her to him while I'm gone. And I come back home yesterday to this feisty, hungry little kitty that can't tell her legs are broken. She's still trying to climb out of the box, do everything, and eating. Like, she even pooped this morning, which is a great sign. She hadn't done that yet. But just eating, a little appetite. She ate, dadgum, a whole near can of food yesterday. We got some special foods to help her build up her red blood cells. She's real neat. She's too anemic for surgery right now. And folks raised nearly like $3,800 for this cat so that we can help her with her aftercare. And it's money I didn't have. I didn't have that. I just couldn't put my hands on that right now. There's too much going on. I just didn't have it. It can be easy to be led astray by the darkness, to fall prey to doubt when tested. But to be taught a lesson in faith and toughness by this broken ragamuffin stray cat, that'll stop you in your tracks. That baby, brand new into the world, just a few weeks, struck down by some piece of machinery she didn't understand. For all we know, it took her mama too, maybe her siblings. Broke her legs, ripped her up. She didn't fall into a pile of tears. She just kept going. Parasites and bugs taking what precious blood she had left. She just keeps going. Hoping. Looking for something. Don't even know what she needs, but she just keeps going. For 5 days with zero chances of survival, she keeps going. She didn't know she was looking for Rachel, but lucky her, that's what she found. Another fighter looking for a win. I thought back to all the times in my life that I thought I was down and done. All the times that for whatever reason, I just kept going. Not even knowing what I needed to survive, just hoping. We all do it. We all do it. Some of you may be going through it right now, feeling like you lost already, but you keep getting up every day. You don't even know what you need, but you know you need something. I tell you, ain't a bad strategy, folks. Worked out pretty good for little Ophelia. I don't know what the opposite of failure to thrive is, but she's got it in spades. Rachel called it refusal to die, and I like that. Whatever it is, I got the sneaking suspicion you got it too. I am rooting for you. I'm rooting for you. I'm rooting for you. When the world knocks you to the asphalt and tears your skin and breaks your bones, when the chaos of life tears your heart wide open and pours the hurt right down in the cracks of you, I am still rooting for you. Because I've seen what survival looks like. It ain't clean. It sure as hell ain't pretty. It's blood and mud and busted teeth. It's limping down a gravel road with one good leg and a belly full of grit. It's still just daring the world to swing on you again. That little anemic, maggot-ridden, broken cat dragged herself out of a ditch and into redemption. And if that tiny thing can find the strength to crawl towards the light, by God, so can you. Keep going. Keep going. When your faith in yourself is thinner than a pancake at a truck stop, keep going when you can't see one damn thing ahead of you but the next stubborn step. Keep going when your heart whispers quit and your soul says no. Because somewhere up ahead, beyond all that ache and dust and noise, there's a dawn that's been waiting for you, and it don't rise without you. So stand up, wipe the blood off your chin. square your shoulders against the wind. Take one breath, then another, then one more after that. You don't have to smile. You don't have to fix it. You just have to keep moving. Keep growing. Keep crawling if you have to. Just don't you dare stop until the light finds you. I'm JW and I love you. Old ragamuffin cat. Make me realize I need to toughen up. Boy, don't it show up in all packages? Don't it just? God almighty, don't none of y'all give up. And save that cat. 1,602 smiles for babies that need smiles. Babies that ain't gonna give up. Babies gonna keep going. I ain't in Alcatraz, I ain't in Folsom. Just a renegade, south of Wholesome. Think what you will. My wife's proud of me. If you're a friend, take me as I am.